When you picture Olam Haba, you close your eyes and you picture what Olam Haba is, right? And you think about it and you say to yourself, this is what Olam Haba is. So what do you see? What do you see in that vision of Olam Haba? What is Gan Eden to you? So typically speaking, if you would ask most people, you were probably affected by such movies as Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, or I don't remember if it's Bogus Journey or Excellent Adventure. It's been a long time, right? And unfortunately, that's there. It's one of the two. Or by The Simpsons, or by anything else in which you picture these like little clouds with everybody hanging out together, and it's a big chill, right? It's basically like all family entertainment where, you know, you have everybody's sipping on a pina colada while you're chilling out in a hammock in the middle of somewhere on a cloud, of course, right? The trees growing out of clouds. And everybody's just chilling out and doing absolutely nothing. It's just, there's games going on, like some people are playing backgammon and some people are playing like a little, you know, like there's little stuff going on and everybody's just chilling out doing absolutely nothing. That's like the vision. The vision is that nothing else is going on. Nothing else is going on. And you see that all these cruise trips and vacation spots, the hot spots, they're all showing you the exact same thing. If you want to come to us, know that what you're going to do here is nothing. You are not going to do a thing. You are going to sit down and you are going to do absolutely nothing for 3, 4, 5 days. What was I listening to a commercial the other day on the radio where the commercial went down and it just said, 4 days without email, just sitting on the beach and doing nothing? Life can't get much better than this. That was that. I mean, I would go bored out of my mind in 3 hours. Maybe I'd be able to sleep for 3 hours of a nap in the middle of the afternoon. After 3 hours are there, I honestly don't know, but that's what everybody pictures Olam Haba is. Olam Haba is just a massive chill where you're just sitting down and you're doing nothing all day long. You're absolutely not able to do it. That's what Olam Haba is all about, right? Olam Haba is just about chilling out and doing absolutely nothing. Now, as a quick side note, I've never been wealthy before. I have no idea what it's like to take a week off to go to the Caribbean or to Jamaica or any of these, you know, crazy spots in the middle of nowhere. I can imagine that going from there back to Chicago in 30 degree April weather is probably Gehenna. I would assume that plane ride on the way back would very well be Gehenna. That's possible. It might have been from X coming back from Florida to here. That's possible. Right? He brought a little bit of Florida with him today. But that I can definitely, I can understand that. But I've also seen enough movies that have told me the following, that sitting around and doing nothing is also really bad because you get bored really, really quickly. There's been enough movies about that as well. As well as the movies that tell you that being bored is Gan Eden and Olam Haba. Although I've never asked them that stira, by them I mean the Jews that are in charge of Hollywood, not even so sure that they would understand the contradiction behind it, I can think that the reason why they don't want to do that is because they don't want to ruin the American dream of doing absolutely nothing as being your absolute, that's that. I have a friend of mine, a good friend who works for a roofing company, who said that he knows I love fish, and he knows that I love fish tanks and everything like that. So he said he went to a certain house, and he saw that this house had, the guy showed him, he brought him in, and he showed him that there was this huge room. He told me, he described it to me as twice the size of a Dossie Shuren's main shoal, twice the size. Okay, and the entire room was filled, wall to wall and everywhere in between, with massive fish tanks. Everything, the whole place is just absolutely filled with fish tanks. So the guy, right, does nothing else but take care of his fish tanks all day long. So this guy, my friend, asked him, he's just like, what got you started into this? What is this? He said, well, I worked a very long time and I made a lot of money and I retired and I was sitting at home doing nothing all day and my wife and I were ready to kill each other. So my wife said, either pick up a hobby or we're getting divorced. So I picked up a hobby. He had a lot of money. So when he picked up a hobby, he started with a couple fish tanks, then he went to another couple, then he went, and now he's got an aquarium. He's got like the John Ted aquarium in his house sitting inside there. Now listen to this. He has two people working full time for him. Okay, 8-hour days. They're working full time during the day to take care of the fish tanks, and he spends 9 to 10 hours taking care of the fish every single day. So he asked him, he said, you know, are you happy now? He said, I love it. This is the life. This is the life. This is like the greatest life in the world. He's spending 9 to 10 hours taking care of fish, and I'm telling you, I was kind of a little jealous. 9 to 10 hours taking care of his fish tanks all day long with two workers together with him. Right? His vacation is not sitting at the pool sipping his pina colada. Maybe he does go out of town quite a bit. I would assume he takes vacations because this guy has all the money in the world if you have that much. But that's what he does. This is what makes him happy.
See, Parshas Bahar starts off with a very crazy concept. Have a concept of Shemitah. Don't work your land all year long and seemingly just rest. Sit back, relax, and just sit in your hammock all day. There's a hammock over there. Go sit in your hammock, right, and just do absolutely nothing. That's what it seems Parshas Bahar is trying to do. But the truth is, the Ramban says, that's not what you're supposed to do during the year of Shemitah. The year of Shemitah is supposed to be, instead of working in business and working hard to make those things go, Shemitah is supposed to be about learning Torah all year long. You have a year off from work, so you go and you start learning. It's got to be equal. The same amount that you spent while working your field should be spent learning Torah. If you were getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go milk the cows and take care of everything that your farm needs, then you have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and do everything else when it comes to learning. You just spend all the hours of the day that you spent on your farm. If that's a relax, now that's not what Shemitah is all about. Shemitah is not a vacation. Shemitah is utilizing your time properly and knowing what to do when your time is off, when you don't have it. What was it that we learned this morning in the Mishnah Berurah? What was it? Kuf Nun Gimel, I believe it was. That started off, the Mishnah Berurah says, like a balabas who only gets to learn 3 or 4 hours a day. Like a balabas that only gets to learn 3 or 4 hours a day. Gotta love the Mishnah Berurah. Man, the Chafetz Chaim is so awesome. Absolutely unbelievable. There's nothing to talk about. This type of work, of trying to work on Torah when you can, sort of like Shabbos is for the weekdays. You work all day during the week, so Shabbos should be a day. Now where you rest, now you sit down and you do nothing, but Shabbos should be a day where you have at least 4 or 5 hours of learning in. At least you can become a Bala Bus on Shabbos. To at least do it then, this destroys the Satan. The Satan is a big, fat ball of Taiva. That's what he is. He's a big, fat guy. He's like that huge guy, like that 600-pounder. And he's filled with taiva. He's holding Winkies and...
Winkies.
Twinkies. Oh yeah, the Winkie guys. I meant the little Winkies. Yeah, no, I did mean Twinkies, though. But we'll pretend that I said Winkies and Twinkies. And Entenmann's donuts and Dunkin' Donuts and a big thing of ice cream, and he's sitting it all in his jolly little lap, and he's sitting, ho ho ho, I am ready to do whatever you want. That is what the stuff is. So all you got to do is run away from him, because big fat guy over there is not going to be able to chase after you. He's not going to come after you. He's not going to be able to run after you and be able to grab. All you have to do is run away, and you won't be able to catch up. Once your work ethic gets into it, that's there. Says Rav Matzio Solomon 7 years ago in the Agudah convention here in Chicago, he said, isn't it amazing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it into the minds of the leaders of this great country to give us 2 days off? Not just Shabbos, but Sunday as well. You're in the middle of work. You have a Sunday. Sunday is not a day where, okay, I can go to the 9 o'clock mini now, and then I get to play baseball all morning, and then I'll go hang out, you know, maybe watch a little game on the TV, whether it's golf or baseball or football or basketball, whatever it is, and then I'll, like, hang out with my kids for, like, 12 minutes, and then afterward we'll go eat dinner, and then I go chill out, and maybe I'll go to night dinner for an hour. That's a waste of a Sunday. It's a waste. Now, for some of you, that's like, oh my God, that was the greatest Sunday ever. Like, I wish that would be my Sunday. That's the biggest waste that you could possibly have of any day. You have a complete and utter day off, and you spend it learning for 1 hour? You should be spending 1 hour at least while you're learning. Forget about when you have the whole day off. You have the whole day off. Do whatever you can. This is what it is. So not to tell Solomon, what do you do on your day off? That's Parshas Bahar. And what Shemitah is all about, and getting yourself ready for a year off. What are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to? How are you supposed to take care of yourself? And then you get right into B'chul Kosai, and it's not stopping there. In B'chul Kosai Teleichu, right? What does Rashi say? To you on Melim B'Torah, right? To be Amol B'Torah. Now, what does it mean to be Amol B'Torah? I know what it means. I know what it means to be Lomed Torah. To look in, pay attention to the words, and try to figure out what it means. That I get, to be Lomed Torah. I know what it means to be, I guess if you say to me, Osik B'Torah. You know what Osik B'Torah is? Osik B'Torah is you're walking outside and you're having a conversation with a Bayan Rabbah at the exact same time. I get that. You're just like, Abaye, I don't understand you whatsoever. Rabbah, you stop this. I'll take care of this. All right? You're talking with Rabbah and Abaye. You bring them out when you're Osik in something. You're dealing with something. It's with you all day and all night. Everything you see in the street reminds you of, oh my gosh, that's a case of Bava Basra. Oh my gosh, that's a Medrash. You start thinking things in. That's what it means to be Osik in Torah. I get that. So what's Amal? What does it mean to literally toil and to understand what it is? So we have a hint. Anu amelim umakablam schar. We work hard and we get rewarded for it. Heim amelim ve'ena makablam schar. They work hard
and they don't get scholar for it. They don't get rewarded for it. Now, what does that mean? Do you mean to tell me that that guy who's working out there in that big yellow Caterpillar truck, that guy over there, wait, he doesn't get paid for the work that he does? He works hard all day, and he doesn't get paid? Of course he gets paid. So what's the difference? So what do you mean, this is schar in Olam Haba? What, everybody was made to sit and learn all day? You don't get any schar for working if that's your tachlis in life, if that's your tachlis in life? There's no schar? That can't be. So what's the difference? What's the difference? The teretz is a very, very simple teretz. Chofetz Chaim gives this as an example, not exactly this example, but he was talking about something about 100 years ago, so I kind of modified it to be able to fit where you guys are right now. You have a 5-page report that is due on Thursday. Today is Monday. So the 5-page report is due on Thursday. You go on Monday to the library. You spend 5 hours of research inside on Monday doing all the research that you need to do. And Tuesday, you compare, you contrast, you write down different contradictions, you write down all the different things that you need to know, all the different details, you work out things online, whatever, spend another 4 hours on Tuesday. On Wednesday, you go and you pick out the little notepad and the thing that you want to write it down on, you write a rough draft, you put in a little thing over there, and then you spend another 8 hours on Wednesday. On Thursday, it's due. You come into class on Thursday, the teacher says, "Where's the report?" You say, "Well, I spent 5 hours, then 4 hours, then 8 hours. It's 17 hours altogether on it. So I don't have a report for you, but I did spend a lot of time on it." What does your teacher say? Clearly an F. I mean, if it's HTC, then yeah, okay, it's fine. I mean, in most places, right, what's it going to be? It's going to be altogether, you spent 17 hours on it, you don't have anything, that's an F minus. Like an F minus. You get a zero. You get an absolute zero for the paper. You didn't come out with anything. But I worked so hard for 17 hours. That counts as zero if you didn't do what you were supposed to do in the first place. See, that's not the same thing by Torah. You could spend 17 hours on one sukkah and not come out with anything. You have no idea what the sikkum is. No idea what the halakha is. And if you spent 17 hours on it, you have 17 hours of schar. Anu amelim, when we work hard at it, we're mekabel schar even if we come out with nothing. Even if we spent the whole time on Beis Shammai. Or even if we spent the whole time in Reb Meir. We don't paskin like Beis Shammai or Reb Meir. You could be spending the entire time on a shita that no one holds up. No one even thinks of holding up. And you still get schar for all 17 hours because that's what Torah is. But if you do that in the other world, you spend 17 hours doing something that does not work, lamaisa, you don't get paid. You don't do anything whatsoever. I was spending 17 hours preparing to dry clean your shirt. I'm not paying you the dollar for this shirt. It's not even worth a dollar. That doesn't mean anything in that world. It's a different type of world. We don't care, and I'm being serious, we don't care in our world about brilliance. Brilliance really means nothing to us. Now granted, brilliance in the yeshiva world will get you that pretty girl. It could get you that pretty girl in the shidduch world, and it might be able to get you that. It's possible you even get a job out of it, but you'll have absolutely no respect. Absolutely none. Especially not from yourself, let alone from other people. But you will have absolutely no respect because you only get schar for working it through. The only real profit and the only real kavod that a person should get in our world, at least in Shemayim, even if it doesn't happen in Olam Hazeh, is for the work that you put in. You could go upstairs after 120 and they'll ask you shiloh after shiloh after shiloh. And it would be like this. You sit there and they ask you and they say, "So what do you think in the sugya of Naskid Rebbe Abba? What do you come out with at the very end of the day?" And you could be like, "Easy. Okay, it's going to be this way if there's Adam, if there's one, two Adam, it's this way, if there's no Adam, it's this way, if it's one Adam, it's that." They're going to say to you, "Okay, how much time did you spend on it?" And if you say 17 seconds, they're going to look at you and say, "That means nothing to us. You get 17 seconds worth of schar." It might be they came out with it. No, go another guy. And another guy comes in and said, "I spent 12 hours on it, I couldn't really figure it out, I don't know what we came out with at the end of the day." And they look at it and say, "You spent 12 hours? You get 12 hours worth of schar." That's crazy. The dumb guy, so to speak, is the smartest guy in the world in Shemayim. That guy gets everything. Because it goes by amelus, not by what comes out of the sikkum and out there. Now, I had a teacher in 7th grade for math. Her name was Mrs. Bender, perhaps. Mrs. Bender. Mrs. Bender used to give me... I liked math a lot. And especially when it came to easy math, before we got to like calculus and stuff like that, she allowed me to go ahead. I was a couple chapters ahead, and I was doing it on my own. Like, I had it on my own. So I remember that we took a test once, and I came out and she gave me like a 70 something or like a 60 something on the test, and I was shocked. So I brought it up to her and I said, I don't see what's wrong. She said, well, you got all the answers right, but you had no idea how to get there. So I said, I don't get what the difference is. If I figured out a way to get there and I had all the answers, I got every answer right at the end of the day. I said, what difference does it make if I don't know how to get there? And she said, you don't understand. In order to get to the next level, you have to know the methodology to get there. So I said, it's not that big of a deal. When I get to the next level, I'll figure it out there as well. Okay? And she told me, no, I'm not going to let you do it. I want you to refigure out the formulas and figure it out from there. So I was upset. It also reminded me of a story from Sideways Stories of Wayside School, if anybody remembers Ron. That's from a long time, an old time. Ron was also able to figure it out. I was also, if you come out with the answer every single time, even if it's 12, 13, 17, 2, and that comes out to be the answer, good, you got the answer. The answer is 2. I always sat there and I said, I always got the answer. But I didn't realize it then, because I was in 7th grade. I realized it my junior year of high school. Well, all of a sudden I can figure out pre-algebra. I figured out algebra. I was able to figure out geometry, fine. When all of a sudden you're getting into the pre-calculus, if you don't know the formulas, you can't get anywhere. You have no idea what's going on. So maybe you were able to figure out the shorter ones and the real quick ones, those guys over there, you're able to figure out, because you can figure out the answer if you do this and go all the way around or whatever. It might take you a little bit more time, but you'll be able to figure out the answer. But if you don't know the proper formulas to get up to the proper way, then it doesn't make a difference. And that's what I can really compare this to. You might get the answer, but if it's a roundabout way, I don't mean a roundabout way as in you're doing this and that and the other. I mean like you're doing it quickly and you're figuring it out really quickly. We don't care. We want to see your work. We want to see what you did to get to the answer. If at the end of the day you forgot that 8 times 7 is 56, right? If you forgot that at the end of the day, okay, it's not that big of a deal. You got the formula down, now you just got to work on the little tiny details. That's a minus 1, but you get everything else. But if you didn't have that, even though at the end of the day you got it, you're missing on the whole point of what math is, which is building up based on what you had beforehand. You could have the answer for Naska to Rebbe Abba, but if all you know is the answer Naska to Rebbe Abba, but you don't know how to get there, you'll never know how to figure out how Naska to Rebbe Abba applies back and a sugya on Mem Hayam and Aleph. You'll look at another sugya on Mem Hayam and Aleph, you'll look at it, you'll be like, wait a second, how could this work? And if you don't know how Naska to Rebbe Abba worked, then you'll have no idea why this worked. That's the point. You might know the answers, but if you don't know the methodology, you have no idea what you're doing. And that's the reason why it's so upsetting. Because every part of Gemara seems like it's a separate category. Here's this, and here's that, and here's that. And it shouldn't be. It should all be going together, working from one way to the other. And that's the way it is if you're spending hours of Seder on it. Or if you're spending time at night on it, and Chazrin. But if you're not, and it's just an hour here, an hour there, and that's it, then of course you're not going to get it. Of course you're not going to find any pleasure in looking it through. How in the world are you supposed to figure out if all you know is yes here, no there, us or here? Of course you're not going to get anything. If you were doing that, you might as well do a Rambam. That's not the point. The point is the methodology and bringing you up to there. I think that's the Pshat and Sideways Stories of Ways That's Cool. I think that's really the idea behind it. And there was a tremendous Maisa that's brought down with the Chavetz Chaim. And I said it 5 years ago, but I don't think anybody was here then. So it's an unbelievable life. His son-in-law, Rav Hirsch, was learning together with the Chavetz Chaim. They were learning the Sukkah together for hours and hours and hours. Finally, they came out with a Pshat. They came out with a Pshat and they said, this is absolutely it. This is Pshat behind it. They were debating each other for hours. Finally, they came out and they said, this is it. Chavetz Chaim summed it all up in a line and a half in the Bir Halacha. So when he wrote the Mishnah Berurah, in the Bir Halacha, he wrote it in a line and a half. 7-8 hours of debate between him and his son-in-law, where they were yelling back and forth and trying to figure it out, all summed up in a little line and a half. So Rav Hirsch, his son-in-law, not Rav Shamsho for Hirsch, Rav Hirsch, Zaks, I think it was, commented to the Chofetz Chaim, he says, the people read this line when they go through the Bir Halacha, right? Are they going to know about all the amelus that went into this line? Are they going to know about all the time that we spent into it? Do they realize how much we put into that line and a half of the Bir Halacha? What are they going to say? Chavetz Chaim looked up and he said, you don't understand. In the times of the Russian Tsar, when the Tsar existed and the Tsar was the king and that was up there, there was a man and his son who worshipped everything that the Tsar stood for and everything that the Tsar said. They wanted to go work for the Tsar. So they went to the Tsar's palace and they asked to work for the Tsar. The Tsar sent them to go build the Trans-Siberian Railroad. that went out to go work on the railroad that was going to go from one end of Russia to the other end of Russia. That was a huge job in the middle of nowhere. They were sent to go do it. And they did it. So they looked up, you know, the sun looked up after another 12-hour workday. Another 12-hour workday where they were working like dogs day and night in order to make sure this thing would go. And the son said to his father, "Dad, when the conductor brings the train down this road, when the conductor allows this train to go through, is he ever going to think about the person who put down the railroads? Is he ever going to appreciate the amount of hard work that we did, that we put into this and making this railroad? Is he ever going to care?" His father looked up and was surprised at him. He looked at him and he said, "The Tsar told us to do it. There's no, who cares? What difference does it make? It's not about what the person appreciates and whether the person is going to like it or not, whatever it is. Working for the Tsar is reward enough," said the father to his son. And that's the way we have to look at it. Who cares if nobody knows? Who cares if you don't come out with the right answer? That's not what Torah is. Yeah, there's halakha, and that's another base. That's something else to deal with. But who cares? If there's a melus that's done, that is our schar. That is our schar. And you know what the schar is? It's not that we're going to be rewarded in Olam Haba, although that's true, we will be rewarded in Olam Haba. That's not what it's all about. It's about the fact that we're working for the King. We are right now working for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you work hard at it, even though, yeah, there are times where it's really difficult, and even though it's annoying, and even though you might think, you know, I can get this in a second, I don't need to work hard whatsoever. In 5 minutes, I can get what'll take that guy over there 3 hours to work on. And that might be true. It might be true that it'll take you 5 minutes for that guy to be able to work at 3 hours, and therefore I can take a half hour break in the middle of Seder. I can go to the bathroom for 45 minutes and do whatever everybody does down in the bathroom for 45 minutes in the middle of Seder. Maybe I can do that. But you're totally missing out on what the point of Seder is there for. It's not for finding a time to have a break. It's not for getting everything as quickly as possible. It's for working things out. And when you finish that up, do it again. Do it again. Rish Lakish went over everything 24 times before he went into Rabbi Yochanan. Does this ring a bell by anybody here? Anybody hear that? 24 times. Rabbi Yosha, well, how much is it? No, 40 by Rabbi Yosha, right? Oh, Rish Lakish was 40? Who's Rabbi Yosha was 24? Before Rabbi Yosha? Chista, 24. I can't, come on. We're dealing. Come on, guys. That's bad. And we go into our shir, and how many times? Now, granted, I will give you, I'm not Rav Yochanan. I'm that close, but I'm not Rav Yochanan. But how many times do you go over it before you come to shir? Once? Maybe. Not even. Half? A third? A quarter? And you're going in. And they went over it 24 to 40 times where Shluckish was no slouch. He's not a guy who's just sitting there saying, "Oh man, I'm so slow." He didn't take it. He went over it 40 times. Because that's what you got to do. You can't just run into something and just say, like, "I got it, I'm fine now, I can go take a break, and I can go sit outside and sit in my hammock." I love that hammock. That, like, defines the definition of not doing anything, is putting up a hammock and sitting in the hammock and sipping a little Kool-Aid. All I want is that big Kool-Aid red guy to come walking through the door, punch him in the face, and say, "Oh, yeah!" That's what I want. That's what I want to happen right at that moment. That's what I want. Because that's not what life is all about. Life is not about the relaxation. You'll have a lot of time to relax in the grave. You'll have about, after 120, you'll relax in the grave for the rest of your life, and you'll love it. It'll be a lot of rest. It's not time. This is the time to work. Work on it. Now, anybody wants to sign up for it?